the losses from electricity will be several percentage points of GDP. And if those losses are basically going to people who are able to pay for electricity but are choosing not to, then that's a very inefficient outcome for the country.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Well, if you're listening to this podcast, then you've got access to electricity. Probably you don't even think about that, but nearly a billion people are not connected to the electricity grid at all, and even more have unreliable or intermittent access. Today, there are two worlds of electricity supply. There's a developed world in which it's reliable and constant, and a developing world in which it's intermittent and rationed. Sustainable Development Goal 7 tells us that access to electricity is a universal right, though. And mass electrification programs today are trying to achieve that goal by the deadline of 2030. The new paper argues that a social norm in which all people deserve electricity regardless of payment may actually be undermining this universal access. Robin Burgess of the London School of Economics, he's also the founder of the International Growth Centre, was one of the authors of the paper. Robin, welcome back to Vox Dev Talks.
Thank you.
I guess that many people listening to this will straight away recoil from your argument that electricity isn't a right. Have you had this reaction?
We have, because I think, unlike in, say, the UK, in many of these countries, electricity is not viewed as a private good that one has to pay for. So there's clearly going to be some resistance to the idea that that right might be taken away.
But you don't disagree about the importance of electricity, reliable electricity, to achieve goals like education and healthcare, the sorts of things that are set out in the Sustainable Development Goals.
Not at all. The whole point of the paper is to argue that by abandoning the notion of a right, one begins to get towards reliable, universal electricity access.
Let's go through the process that you describe in the paper that, as you argue, leads to this low-quality intermittent supply. So, first of all, if non-payment becomes normal because electricity is a right regardless of payment, that leads to commercial losses, does it?
Yeah, the central point of the paper is simply that a norm has developed whereby people feel no compulsion to pay for the electricity they use. So this includes people who are very able to do that. So we find actually that the bulk of the losses are not amongst the poor, they're among the middle and upper parts of the income distribution.
And so then the utilities who are providing the electricity, they have to respond to that. So what are they doing at this point?
Well, basically, under some form of budget constraint, so what they need to do is to ration supply to, because they're experiencing such large losses. So paradoxically, unlike in a normal market, in these markets, each additional consumer is an additional loss to the utility company. People don't pay for their electricity. So the only response, given some form of budget constraint, is for the utility company to cut back in one of two ways, either to ration in the form of blackouts and so forth, but also, in some ways more interestingly, to constrain access, to not expand the grid, particularly towards areas that are poorer in these countries.
But looking at it from the point of view of the people who would use electricity, what's the day-to-day impact on their lives of this?
It's pretty fundamental. I mean, I think the easiest way I can think about it is if you step back and think about what forms of production activities one could engage in without electricity, then they're pretty limited. And so you're basically leaving vast swathes of countries in that situation not being really able to engage in modern production activities.
And so I guess then this does also have a macro impact on economic growth for the country.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to establish a causal relationship, but if one were to graph out either electricity consumption or access to electricity and GDP, it's a very much a steeply sloping upward line.
Do we have empirical evidence that this process is actually occurring at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, the paper draws on many different data sets, but the central data sets it draws on are from a series of randomized control trials that were engaged in with the government of Bihar, which is a poor state of over 100 million people in India. And there we're finding very clear evidence that this is precisely what's going on in that state. And indeed, The point of the RCTs is to work with the government to find ways of, in some ways, breaking this norm so that one then moves from a kind of low payment, low access equilibrium to a high payment, high access equilibrium. That's the intention.
Is this therefore the point at which a government could step in and say, we're going to provide electricity as a universal service, like you could provide health or like you could provide education, and just pay for it for everybody?
You could do that the way that is more sensible, given that one would not necessarily want to subsidize the electricity consumption, for example, of you or I, is to basically provide, for example, some subsidy towards getting people connected to the grid, but then from then on for them to pay the marginal cost of the electricity they use. And that's sort of where the Indian government is headed, because they've been doing a massive drive to connect people. But they recognize that if they were, for example, to pay for everybody's electricity forever, that would put them in an untenable fiscal situation. So that's not really an option.
Is it possible to target these subsidies even further, and so that the people who could least afford to pay for their electricity had it paid for by the government? And as you say, then the middle classes pay their own bills?
Yeah, there's a whole series of things of that ilk happening. So at some level, targeting a subsidy at electricity isn't really necessary. You're really targeting a subsidy that people are poor, who then may not afford electricity or other goods. So people are both thinking about how to better target electricity subsidies, but also to kind of separate out subsidization from the electricity markets, in which case you might provide a cash or some other transfer to people so that they can pay for electricity and other things, which is divorced from the actual pricing of electricity, which would then follow normal market principles.
One other way in which this problem is solved in some places is to provide communities with generators or solar power in local grids. Often this is done by NGOs. Do you think that this approach is sustainable?
I think it has a role to play. We did a large RCT looking at micro solar in Bihar and comparing that to the characteristics of grid electricity. And what we found is that for the poorer individuals who perhaps don't have, you know, the need to run large appliances or that type of thing, then solar did have a role to play. But at the moment, the kind of power one can get, for example, just from a single solar panel on a roof, is often insufficient to satisfy all the demands, not just for households, but also for firms. So I think over time, as solar becomes cheaper, which is happening quickly, there will be various routes in here. Because one has to also remember is that the grid can be powered from different sources. It doesn't have to be powered from fossil fuels. And so I think that is something that will probably happen more and more, is that you have grid electricity, but it's coming from renewables. For example, Brazil has much of its grid electricity from hydroelectric sources.
If you were going to look at this from a purely market-based perspective, then clearly one of the ways to do that is that if people don't pay their bills, they get their electricity cut off. Do you think that that is a practical solution in a developing world?
That may be where you want to get to eventually, but I think at the moment, the fundamental problem is a political economy problem, in the sense that people have become used to not paying for their electricity. So I think as long as, you know, as you were alluding to earlier, as long as you can find ways of providing subsidies for those who are least able to pay, then one can gradually move and then convince other people that it's valuable to pay for the electricity, because it'll have beneficial consequences in terms of access, but also in terms of reliability, which is a huge problem. Then I think eventually that political, so there's a basically the political problem is enmeshed with the sort of social norm problem. Once that breaks down, I think probably the way things work, for example, in this country or in the US, where people do pay for the electricity they use and they get 24-hour electricity and everybody has it, that's going to be the right way of doing things. And they come through private utilities. But you can't move to that directly whilst you have utilities that are losing money, because nobody will want to buy those utilities and take over running them. So you have to sort of solve the social norm and political economy problem before you move to that market solution.
Now, in the developed world, the technology solution to the problem of who gets electricity and how you pay for it is being increasingly solved by installing smart meters. Could that have any role in the developing world in solving this problem?
I think it absolutely can. I mean, it's not, again, going to be a panacea, but part of the problem, for example, is to do with when people collect electricity bills, there's opportunities for collusion between, in effect, the person paying for the electricity and the person collecting it. And some of these technologies help to fix that. But ultimately, if you don't solve the political economy problem, the social norm problem, there's often ways you get around these technological innovations. But they certainly have a lot of promise in terms of removing some of the discretion, but also in terms of enabling people to monitor, as one does here, usage of electricity, to become more expert at perhaps using electricity at certain times of the day when it's cheaper and the like. So I think they have a big future, but they're not going to solve the fundamental problem, which is this long-established norm where people have become used not to paying for electricity.
Yes, and as long as that fundamental problem, as you call it, that traps us in this low-quality electricity supply equilibrium, as long as that remains the political consensus, is it possible to get out of this and to introduce some of these more market-based solutions that you're arguing for?
Yeah, that's precisely what we're doing. So we're doing a set of interventions, both where you're rewarded if your community pays for a higher fraction of electricity with longer hours of electricity. People who collect electricity bills more if they collect more. We're going in with smart meters to think about how one can better monitor what electricity is being used and to target people who are not paying their electricity. So I think there's basically at the moment, we're going in different routes. I mean, the work in this particular paper is on India, but we now started to work with the Prime Minister in Pakistan again on this whole question of energy reforms, because it is such a central issue in terms of the fiscal position of countries. So something that's not realized is that in some of these countries, the losses from electricity will be several percentage points of GDP. And if those losses are basically going to people who are able to pay for electricity but are choosing not to, then that's a very inefficient outcome for the country, because they're not actually contributing to reducing poverty, say, but they are crowding out expenditures that might be used in areas that might contribute more effectively to social welfare.
It's a hugely important problem to solve, and one without an easy solution. But good luck with your work, Robin. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tim.
The paper that we've been talking about is called The Consequences of Treating Electricity as a Right. Authors are Robin Burgess, Michael Greenstone, Nick Ryan, and Anant Sudarshan. And it is in the Journal of Economic Perspectives, Winter 2020. We also did a Vox Dev talk in May 2020 with Ted Miguel, and that does Household Electrification Supercharge Economic Development. That went into the surprisingly complex relationship between electrification and growth. This has been a Vox Dev talk. If you enjoyed it, subscribe on your podcast platform. You will never miss an episode, and past episodes are always at voxdev.org.